That's the other irony. I didn't get any kudos for making it to work or anything. So,
yeah, you'd think.
I stayed in Washougal that whole time.
How was your fiance's opinion of what you did?
She, well, 43 years later, we're still together. My decision making hasn't gotten any better, but she's been very patient and loving. So, yeah, she's glad I made it alive and back down to spend the rest of my life with her.
Well, as long as you got to, you know, I think that's the lesson of all of this is always carry Ritz crackers and a case of beer.
Yes.
Wherever you go in case of emergencies.
I would have that in a survival kit any day of the week for sure.
Well, Rob Robertson, I really appreciate you being on the program today and giving us this this epic story of survival and adventure during May 18th, 1980.
Yeah, well, thank you for letting me share it. It's a day that will live in infamy, as they've said in the past. And thanks again for having me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good day. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Past episodes of Times Like Now can be found wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Trevor Collins. I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. Thank you to the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original music. And I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Had him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Kate Nomura. She's the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at Portland Japanese Garden. And Sarah Kate is talking about a new show called Gifts from Japan, a horticultural tale told through botanical art. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again.
It's wonderful to see you again and wonderful to have you here at the gallery, the garden.
The visitor will probably start in the Tanabe Gallery, which is the small space next to the gift shop. And there you have text up on the wall behind glass, some illustrations, and then you have these fabulous scrolls and vintage or antique books. Just tell us what's in these books of the bomb.
We're really lucky. We have two books from the 1700s that are a two-part volume showing illustrations of maple trees and maple leaves. It's really a scientific text that helps you see the differences in detail in the different types of maple leaves that were growing in Japan at the time.
Next to that is a scroll, and it shows flower arranging.
Yeah, the scroll is from the 1600s. It shows different styles of ikebana flower arrangements, and each different style is quite distinct and is credited to the artist who made the piece. And we think one of the pieces that is on display here on the scroll was made by the emperor at the time.
Mm-hmm. So these are drawings, you know, drawing of a little gray vase, and then I wouldn't call it a botanical drawing because it's not that detailed. It encapsulates the detail of several plants that have all been put in a vase. And it really looks like the ikebana you'd see today.
Yeah, this was an instruction manual and a kind of a visual reference guide of the different arrangements and shapes, meaning and symbology that was being used in ikebana styles that has really come through to today.
America kind of discovered, you know, Japan, well, Europe did too, after the mid-1800s when the country opened up again. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways the public got to explore Japan was through World's Fairs. So they'd build a Japanese pavilion. And what was the big common way that Americans and Europeans were introduced to the culture?
The World's Fairs had a huge impact on the introduction to Japan. And many of the World's Fairs featured Japanese gardens. It was the first time people were seeing bonsai, lilies, Japanese iris, a lot of these plants that are so visually arresting, and they kind of made a splash. botanical flowers and plants really became a big, important economic export for from Japan to the U.S. and Europe, and as well as a cultural export, as you can see through these pictures of the World's Fair.
Philadelphia had a 1876 centennial exposition. They would build, like, just throw up a Japanese garden like that, just temporarily. But they focused a lot on plants. There was posters of all the plants and then postcards, these hand-tinted pictures of you know, these exotic Japanese plants. What are these pictures of flowers in these books?
These are two of the Yokohama nursery catalogs. They were big, beautiful, really richly colored catalogs showing the different plants that the Yokohama nursery was selling. They were one of the major exporters of plants from Japan to the rest of the world. These catalogs are just so eye-catching. People were drawn to them and excited to, you know, see the plants in real life that they were seeing in these catalogs. And the Yokohama nursery were actually the folks who supplied all of the cherry trees that you see in Japan. That you see in D.C. They were a gift from the Japanese people to America, and the Yokohama nursery was really instrumental in getting those cherry trees to the U.S.
So these really flower catalogs, look kind of like art books. They're like soft-backed art books, just huge drawings of flowers and very little text. The very minimal explanation of what it was. So you would just see this fabulous flower and then, I guess, order it.
They're woodblock prints that are then each individually hand-painted. So I agree, they're like works of art in and of themselves.
We're here in the Pavilion Gallery, which is where all the main illustrations are kept. So they all have a formula of a white background, and then they appear to be watercolor, most of them. As you come in on the left, there is a fabulous illustration of, just called chrysanthemum, but it shows all the different kinds of chrysanthemum, the big, heavy-headed, there's a yellow one at the top, then there's one that kind of looks like a firework. The petals are thin with a sort of curl on the end. Then there's another, I don't know, a looser bud, a looser bloom in orange and peach color. And then there's the kind at the bottom that look like big daisies, you know, the white straight petals and the yellow center. Who is this by?
This is by Naomi Kazaki. She's a Japanese artist who follows the tradition of botanical illustration. And in this work, she's showing us, just as you were saying, the huge variety in chrysanthemum that you can see in cultivated plants and in the wild. And I really love that you say they look like fireworks, because that's the first thing that comes to mind when I look at this piece.
Is the chrysanthemum native to Japan?
I believe it's native to China and then was brought to Japan. And then in Japan, they were using it as, you know, for its medicinal properties, and also started cultivating it as a, for its beauty and as a show plant. There are now hundreds of varieties of chrysanthemum, and many of those were developed in Japan.
Right next to that is the black mondo grass. The artist is Arilyn Moran Lawrence, and this is a contrasting plant. It's just a black grass. It looks like it's been bunched together. It's got some berries on it. Where would you see this?
Ever since this exhibit went up, I've been seeing this grass everywhere in backyard gardens here in Portland. It's kind of a subtle, low-lying plant with black leaves, which makes it really unique. But seeing this piece up on the wall, there's some greens, blues, purples kind of being highlighted in the plant. And it's been a real treat to start seeing this on my daily walks.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful painting. The subtle difference between the greens and the purples, and then the black berries in there. It's all on this, again, on this creamy white paper. Right below it, on a different textured paper, it's a bough of persimmon with four fruit dangling. Three of them look ripe. Who's this by?
This is by Jane Levy Campbell. She's an American artist as well. And we tried to loosely group the works by season. So this is really emblematic of fall and autumn. These ripe fruits that are kind of a treat at the end of the agricultural season. And I've seen a lot of these type of persimmon on my walks around Portland as well.
The same artist, Jane Levy Campbell, also did a very small image of the ginkgo. It's just one section with a handful of leaves and then the fruit. It almost looks like a sketch because the pencil is very loose. The color doesn't go all the way to the edges, the yellow and the green. And then her signature is kind of rather grand, but it's still in pencil in the middle of the piece. Is there any significance of the ginkgo in Japanese culture?
Yeah, ginkgo are the most common street tree that you'll see in Japan. As you're walking through Portland, especially in autumn, you'll see their bright yellow leaves shining out, but they are a very important tree in Japan. They help fight pollution. The fruit is edible, and the fan-shaped leaves are really aesthetically pleasing and also kind of show an early leaf kind of shape. They're a really ancient plant, one of the oldest trees, and it's fun to see kind of just a different shape that a leaf can take.
Mm-hmm. Right below that is another chrysanthemum, and this one incorporates, so the leaves at the bottom look kind of old and weathered. They're brown sections to them. Just talk about what kind of illustration this is, because, you know, there's a European tradition, there's a Japanese tradition, and then why did people draw plants?
Yeah, so the original purpose of this type of botanical or scientific illustration is to really show in great detail the specific type of plant. So it's meant to show what the plant will look like throughout different seasons, whether it's flowering or fruiting in the winter, so that you can easily identify this plant if you came across it in the wild or in a garden. When this type of illustration was starting, people were using plants as medicine, so they wanted to be, you know, extremely accurate about which plant they were showing. And they were used in a lot of medical textbooks. A lot of early botanical illustrations are from medical textbooks made by people who were artists, doctors, and botanists.
They would draw them in different states because you couldn't bring the plant back because it would be dead. But in these illustrations, they seem to be flowers in bloom, maybe a little bit of aging on the leaves. Sometimes there are little cutaways or, you know, special features of the center of a flower as a separate drawing. And then they're always on this plain white background. Like, so nobody's trying to tell a story here. They're just trying to capture the essence of the plant. Is that correct?
Exactly. It's kind of removing it from its environment, from like a landscape with scenery, and just really bringing your attention to this one individual plant. And I was hearing from a lot of the artists that they really do try and draw from individual plants. So they will kind of be out in nature doing their reference sketches. I think maybe this ginkgo plant is an example of kind of getting to know the plant, observing close up, you know, a specific ginkgo. And so they'll do a lot of sketches just out in nature of a plant when it's at a really recognizable state. So a lot of these are flowering plants, so I think they wanted to capture what those flowers look like in a really kind of ephemeral moment, but memorialized in their works.
Mm-hmm. And the medium is mostly watercolor. They, you know, this is very tight watercolor. It could almost be like colored pencil. There's nothing impressionistic about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's such a great observation. I feel like I keep getting closer and closer and closer to each piece. I think people are using paintbrushes that are like just a few hairs width to do this work. And the artists are also telling me that it takes many, many layers to get kind of the rich colors that they're looking for, or to highlight, you know, the light on the plant or the shine of the leaf. So these pieces take a really long time to make, especially because they want them to be so accurate.
In the summer section, which is where you stand, and you have your back to the pavilion,
the overlook
where you look at Mount Hood. So if you're in, there's a row of five pieces. So there's one called Shaga, which is an iris, Japanese iris. And again, this one shows a bit more detail. It shows the root that's been pulled out of the ground, and then it shows the leaves when they're starting to die. What is there any significance of the iris?
Yeah, irises are a really important plant in Japan and in the U.S. You'll actually see, while this exhibit is up, we have a group of iris plants down by our waterfall that will be blooming. Iris was just one of the plants that really stood out to Western audiences. They're showy, they're beautiful, there's big blossoms, and you'll see irises in our gardens everywhere around the U.S. today.
So Iris japonica, that came to the U.S. and Europe like after Japan opened up, is that correct?
Exactly. Oregon also has a native iris, which is quite lovely. I think it's really interesting that plants that are native both in the U.S., here in Oregon, and in Japan, that you'll see an iris in both countries. And a lot of Japanese plants have kind of become really popular in the U.S. gardens, maybe more so than the native plants, because they're just so beautiful and hardy.
Mm-hmm. So they're really, people are exposed to a kind of a bigger, maybe just more showy versions of flowers or plants they already knew?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, like, you know, we're familiar with magnolia, iris, rhododendron, but there's just totally different varieties that were native and also cultivated in Japan. And it was really exciting for people to see these for the first time, try and grow them in their gardens. And some of them did really, really well. We'll see later honeysuckle, which had become kind of an invasive plant on the east coast of the U.S. But those are originally from Japan, and they've just, yeah, now an important plant in the U.S. as well.
And you connected with Kew Gardens in London because they did a show. What was their show called a few years ago?
Yeah, their show is called Flora Japonica, which is the flowers of Japan. And that was actually named after a book made in the early 1800s that was the first documentation by Europeans of Japanese plants. And that show features many of the works that you'll actually see in this exhibit here today. That show was Japanese botanical illustrators painting and drawing plants that are native to Japan.
Mm-hmm. And here you have this beautiful wisteria. Again, it's like the iris. It's more purple than the iris. Just the one bloom hanging, and it's kind of off center. The leaves are at the top of the composition, and then everything around this long, elongated purple bloom is just white. It's by Janet Parker. Oh, it was made this year. Colored pencil on drafting film.
I believe Janet is a local Oregon artist. We have, I think, about 8 artists who are from Oregon who are featured in this show. And I really like this piece for a lot of reasons. But one of them is that it's made on, as you said, drafting film, which is a material that doesn't absorb water or pigment. There's also some pieces that are made on vellum, which is like a thin leather, which has similar properties. And I think it's interesting to see the slight differences between, you know, paper or film, and then colored pencil and watercolor. These all look like they're kind of a part of the same family, but when you get really close, you can see those little differences. She has another piece that is a dogwood in the spring section, and it sold on opening night, and she got to meet the buyer, so it was really fun to meet her at the opening.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Kate Nomura. She's the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at Portland Japanese Garden, and she's talking about Gifts from Japan, a horticultural tale told through botanical art, which is on now through July 4th. There's a beautiful stargazer lily. So the lily, you probably know it from the supermarkets. It's that very long petals that open very wide. There's very few petals. And then in the middle, the stamen is sort of balancing. It's almost like a mobile, the kind of right angle, but then they move around. It's quite an amazing, showy flower. And this piece by Dorota Haber Lehigh, it's a stargazer lily. I feel like so many of these plants have a Japanese connection, but we just assume, well, you can just assume they're local or native to the U.S.
Yeah, it's been so much fun putting together this show to learn about all these plants that, you know, I see this lily in flower arrangements, even in, like, you know, my neighborhood grocery store in the flower section all the time. And I had no idea that it originally came from Japan, along with the Easter lily and some other really big scented showy lilies that I'm used to seeing every day. And it's been really interesting to learn about that. And this stargazer lily, part of its name is because the blossoms point upwards towards the sky, like they're looking at the stars. And it's one of the plants that was cultivated in Japan from kind of an original native lily.
Mm-hmm. One of the bigger pieces is called a sotetsu, and it looks like a giant cone. It's yellow. It looks like a corn on the cob, but it's some kind of a seed, I think, pod. And then next to it is the main green piece. It looks like a huge palm leaf. And then there are other pieces kind of floating in the middle of the composition on top of the green palm. This is a different kind of composition, really, where things have been stacked together and placed. What is this Sotetsu plant?
So that's the Japanese name. We call it the sago palm. And this is a really ancient plant. It's more than 200 million years old. So it was around before the dinosaurs. So as we're looking at this piece, things that are hard to pick out, it's really ancient structures of fruit and flower that have been evolving for 200 million years into the plants that we see today. But this is a type of cycad, which I learned really became like a symbol of wealth and power because they grew in tropical areas of Japan, and when they started to be exported, if you had have had the resources to grow one of these tropical, more temperamental ancient plants in your home, very slow growing, then it showed your status and they became very in vogue for a time.
Yeah, in the background to the show, there is a description of someone, you know, when they first kind of discovered Japan in the 19th century, they were like, wow, these people are really into flowers. They have flowers everywhere. Every house has them, and people grow them for themselves, and the more status you have, the more flowers you have.
Yeah, flowers are a really important part of Japanese culture. Japan has a really wealth of native plants and flowers. The climates range from tropical to Arctic. Much like here in the U.S., they have four seasons, or at least in the Pacific Northwest, we have four seasons. So plants and flowers are part of holidays, celebrations, and having a garden and cultivating plants is kind of in the fabric of Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm. On the side of the pavilion that looks out over the flat garden, against glass, there's this huge drawing or painting of a bonsai, and it's got the pot in this incredibly gnarled, rough-barked tree, and then all the pine leaves sticking almost vertical. It's almost like a photo, but it's actually black pine, and it's oil on paper by Asuka Ishii. Totally isolates it. There's no sense of context, and that's kind of how I think of bonsai, because always in pots, people move them around, but they usually put them in like a beautiful corner of a nice building. And so why did you include a bonsai?
Well, to your point, I really like how all the pieces are kind of shown standing alone. It really kind of takes the plant out from its natural environment and helps me notice it more. And then when I'm out about in gardens, I am able to pick out individual plants a bit more. But this piece is part of the Huntington Museum, Library, and Botanical Gardens permanent collection. One of their curators, Robert Horry, was kind enough to be a guest curator for this exhibit. He was talking to a lot of the botanical artists, helping select pieces for this show. And this is just a really extraordinary example of realism, observation, and masterful use of medium, the way that this artist, Suka, used oil paint in this piece.
There's so much detail. I mean, it looks kind of like an oyster shell, or a contour map of a mountain range, because there are so many layers to it, and you can get really close up, and then you realize, oh, I'm looking at, twigs that are sticking out right. They must be sticking several inches out from the tree, but it's all flat because of this white background. It's like an optical illusion. It's fantastic. And then the whole tree is like leaning over and spilling out of the right side of the pot. I mean, if you had to choose between spending $100,000 on a bonsai or this, what would you do?
That's an impossible choice, and I cannot answer that on the record.
I'd get this and then like a pine air freshener. On the spring wall, there's a piece by Mieko Ishikawa, and it's a cherry blossom. It's a Yamazakura, and it's white blossom with a few twigs and brown leaves. And then there are these extra sections where they've zoomed in on, how both sides of the leaf look. The sort of oval leaf with a point and a serrated edge. Two types of cherry, a black and a red, and what the buds look like. And then there's some pencil drawing, just black and white drawings of a cross-section of the flower.
Yeah, I think this is a really great example of that botanical and scientific illustration kind of history and style, where she really shows you this exact type of cherry tree. You cannot confuse it with a different type, because she shows you, the leaves on both sides, the you know, the flower in great detail, what it looks like when it's budding. So it's really meant to help you identify this specific plant, but she's also done it in a really aesthetically beautiful and pleasing way where it's a work of art in its own right as well.
And then many of the pieces on the cards, on the descriptive cards, somebody's associated a haiku with them. And this one, Yama Zakura, that means, Yama means mountain, Zakura is cherry blossom. The poem, the haiku is by Hoitsu, and it just says, flower petals set the mountain in motion, cherry blossoms. So you can picture a mountain where there are so many of these, they're all blowing in the wind, you know, in springtime. It's quite a nice image.
Our exhibition coordinator, Carolyn Supinka, is a poet, and she curated a selection of poems that go along with the different seasons and paintings in this exhibit. And I should also, say that Aki Nakanishi is our curator, our Arlene Schnitzer curator of art, culture, and education, and he partnered with Robert to put together this exhibit.
On the final wall, there is a pair of pieces on vellum. They're watercolor on vellum. They're both camellias by Akiko Enokido. Dark orange petals with dark green shiny leaves, and they seem to be like a bird's nest underneath them, and it's vellum. So just tell us a bit about vellum and how it works.
Yeah, vellum is related to parchment. It's a very traditional material for making art and writing text. It's made out of really thin leather, so unlike paper, it doesn't absorb any of the water or pigment from the watercolor paint, so it just sits on top and it lets you get that really rich color. But because it's not absorbent, you need to do many thin layers, so you can tell that she put a lot of work and a lot of close observation into creating this really beautiful piece.
And that's the camellia
Yuki Tsubaki.
And then right next to it is a Yuki Botan. So it's a white camellia, same kind of leaves, because she's really gone for the luster. And then it all focuses on this one white bloom, which is it kind of looks like a dog rose. It's that kind of shaggy, close bloom. And then the background is great because it looks like marble, like white marble, kind of cream colored with black lines. It's just a cutting, so maybe it was placed on a table, but there's no sense that it was growing on a tree when she did it. It's just kind of placed down. And the focus on the flower is amazing, and there's a sort of lightness around it. The background gets lighter, almost like to highlight it. Do you know who Akiko is?
Yeah, Akiko is an artist based in Japan. She's part of a botanical artist guild in Japan, and she was really instrumental in putting this show together. She helped organize all of her colleagues, other Japanese botanical artists, and also helped jury the show as well. Her insight as a working artist was really important for us, kind of selecting pieces of the quality and accuracy that we're looking for this exhibit.
In your conversations about setting up the whole show, what were the Japanese artists keen to get across about their art and their culture?
So I will say Robert Hori was our main point person with the Japanese artists, but things that I were hearing were showing a nice representation of different plants that were native to Japan, kind of highlighting the differences even in varieties. So Akiko here did two different varieties, one's white, one's reddish-orange, and just sharing the amazing diversity of plants and flowers that are in Japan, native to Japan.
There's not much about the symbolism of like what each flower might mean. It is botanically focused and aesthetically focused.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really great observation. They're really meant to show this particular plant and remove all other context.
If you were studying like Ikebana, then you'd go into the symbolic meaning of each plant, right?
Yeah, I think all of the artists here are kind of students of horticulture, and you know, I think that they have layers of meaning and reason that they want to do this particular plant. Maybe they're growing it, maybe they have a special connection, but they're just really showing us a snapshot in time that's really accurately observed of this particular plant that they captured and shared with us.
Mm-hmm. It really is a lot of pleasure in the way they've just created this representation of something they truly love. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Sarah Kate Nomura. She's the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at Portland Japanese Garden, and she was talking about Gifts from Japan, a horticultural tale told through botanical art, which is on now through July 4th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Sarah Kate.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure getting to see you again, Joseph. Thanks for coming to the gallery.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Add him on now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 31 de mayo del 2022. En medio de la pandemia, la Nación Insular del Pacífico Sur de Vanuatu ha declarado una emergencia climática. El Parlamento de